Welcome on in to the 7 o'clock hour, hour number 2 of the program. It's a Tuesday with Turtle, and if you haven't already, please go vote on the poll. It's a simple question tonight. Will the Falcons have a top 5 offense in 2025? Oren Romain, I have something.
What you got?
Before we get into our 5 Braves True False.
Let's do it.
We have our most recent Falcons depth chart.
Ooh, heading into game 2, huh?
Heading into preseason game number 2. I will read it as follows, as it's listed. Wide receiver 1, Drake London is the starter.
Obviously.
Backup, Kadarrell Hodge.
As of, yeah, obviously right there too.
Reserve, David Sills.
He got some run, I saw, with the first team today.
He has been getting run with the first team. They've liked him. And then the final reserve, Chris Blair. Somebody named Quincy Skinner is also on the list. I don't know who that is.
It doesn't bode well, I guess, maybe.
Left tackle, obviously, Jake. Storm Norton is your backup there.
Okay.
Matthew Bergeron with Elijah Wilkinson backing him up. Ryan Neuzel with the struggling Javon Gwynn backing him up. That may change.
They didn't block the Titans with their second team offensive line again today.
And that's following Chris. With the theme that they stunk in the preseason game number 1.
No movement I saw. No movement in the run game with the second team offensive line today.
11 carries for 22 yards in that first game. Not good.
Yeah.
Kyle Hinton backing up Chris Lindstrom. Brandon Parker also not playing well, backing up Caleb McGarry. Jack Nelson may get some more run. He started that last game. He's listed 3rd. Tight end Charlie Warner.
Charlie!
Tight end Kyle Pitts. Their backups. Somebody named Tegan Quatrariano, never heard of him, is backing up Warner and Felipe Franks.
Felipe, hanging
our,
around,
our
man.
Good old buddy, Felipe Franks, backing up Pitts. Obviously, RB1, Bijan, RB2, Algier. Now, this is interesting. Despite not playing and currently being injured, Carlos Washington Jr. is still your RB3.
Okay.
So I find that interesting. Nathan Carter, he's the player that unfortunately had the hit to the head of Mo Norris from the Lions. He was playing well, though. And then Elijah Dotson backing him up. Penix, Cousins, Easton Stick, Emory Jones, your QB room, Mooney, Casey Washington backing him up. That's interesting. DJ Chark behind him, Ray-Ray McLeod, Jamal Agnew behind him, and Dylan Drummond and Nick Nash rounding out your wide receiver room. I would say nothing crazy, nothing dramatic there.
No.
A couple of things to follow. Carlos Washington Jr., does he keep that RB3 spot?
They are big fans of Carlos Washington.
Yeah, he got a lot of run last year, too.
He did.
And then can Casey Washington, speaking of the Washingtons.
Big touchdown catch today, yeah.
Can he hold on to that backup spot behind Darnell Mooney? We'll go over the defense a little bit later in the show, but that is the offensive updated depth chart for the Falcons. Right now, we got to get to 5 Braves, true, false questions.
For tonight's true false, sir, we are going to fast forward 12 months into the future. So,
your DeLoreans.
Yeah, it's the 12th of August, 2026. Everything is honky dory. My kids are doing well. Chris is progressing his relationship. Everything is where it needs to be. But there's some questions we need to ask about these Atlanta Braves. Question number 1, sir. Fast forward 12 months from now, Strider and Chris Sale return to at least 15-win form in 2026.
I'm going to say true. And to quote myself from a couple of days ago, Oren, they better. They better return to 15-game form against Sale is pitching tonight in Gwinnett. Hopefully that goes well. And Strider has been inconsistent at best, if we're being nice. He hasn't looked great. So
Grant did offer some optimism in saying that his last start Now, take this for what it's worth, because last start he gave up the most hits he's ever had in his career.
11.
But he had the highest velocity of the year so far. The highest average velocity for Spencer Strider was his last start. So,
well,
glass half full, glass half empty on that one.
Deisbel Hernandez throws hard too, but he stinks. So I don't really care. Get people out.
Fair enough.
But I'm going to say true. They're both good to go next year.
Okay. Mr. Michael Harris, sir. Not asking for a lot from Michael, but asking for something. Michael Harris hits at least 270 in 2026. I talk about home runs, RBI, stolen bases. Just give me 270 in 2026. True or false?
What is he at, like 240 right now?
He's on the cusp of 240 right now, but that OPS is still awful. Absolutely dreadful.
270? False. I'm going to say slightly below.
And are we going to be above 250? I'll take 265, 260 somewhere
265.
In there. Just give me decent on base. Just draw some more walks for me.
Okay, so with that said.
241 right now with a 658 OPS.
Oh, my goodness.
His on base is only slightly higher than his average. His on base is 264. He's batting 241, his on base is 264.
Yeah, that's unbelievable how bad that is. Have we given up on five-tool Harris, all-star, superstar, generational center fielder?
I don't think so yet, just because of – this is the thing, like Jordan, the ceiling is the floor. It's
ceiling is the roof.
Ceiling is the roof. There's a high ceiling and a very low floor for Michael Harris. And it's just a matter of how much you're prepared to deal with the bad if it starts to go bad.
And it went bad.
Because
now it's good.
Yeah, now the guy has tremendous skill, tremendous promise, just about consistency with him. But when it's not consistent, it looks like it did in that first half of the season, and it's dreadful. So just are you prepared to ride out the potential of the highs that come with the potential of the lows?
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to. They're not changing their plan, at least not for another couple of years, in my opinion. So, yep, they're going to be stuck with him, good or bad. Hopefully he's more good than bad. Not like this year.
Currently, Ozzie Albies is sitting on 9 home runs. 9 home runs. This comes after he had 33 home runs in 2023. He had 30 in 2021, 24 in 18 and 19. I have a number down here, but I'm going to change it. Okay. I have 25 home runs. I'm not going to say 25.
Give me
22 home runs. Does Ozzie Albies have 22 home runs in 2026?
No. I think Ozzie might be shot. And I hate to say that because he's still so young. But I don't understand the degenerative, that's a tough word to say, degenerative nature of his play.
He has regressed.
It is offensive, it's defensive, and it's all around. And I don't get it, and I don't know why, other than maybe the injury, because he's been hurt a lot too. So the injuries maybe caught up to him. Maybe they had some permanent deterioration of his skills. And I'm worried about Ozzie. He's the one I'm most worried about for the future. I'm going to say no.
All right. Let's turn our attention to Austin Riley.
Oh, boy.
Now, Austin played 159 games in 2023, drove in 97 runs. Year before, 93 runs, 159 games. Year before, 160 games, 107 RBIs. Last 2 years, 110 and 102 in terms of games played, 56 and 54 RBI. So next year, Austin Riley, sir, drives in at least 95 runs. True or false?
To quote myself again, Orin, he better. They got a lot of money left on that contract. He signed basically through Franklin's elementary and middle school career.
Yeah,
so,
basically, yes.
So he better.
Franklin will be hitting those double-digit years while Austin Riley's about to close out that contract.
He has. Somebody on this team has to return to form. I think Riley's still got a lot left in the tank, so I'm going to say true.
Okay. Last one. Not saying the division, not even saying which wild card spot. But the Braves are at least a wild card team in 2026. True or false?
Yeah, I'm going to say true. I'm going to say this is not a long-term issue.
It's an outlier.
This is an outlier season. They return back to form and are in the playoff mix again this year. And I'm saying that partly selfishly because, Oren, I don't want to do this again. This sucks.
It's dreadful as we get into these months right now where this is I don't want to talk about the Braves.
This is awful, and I don't want to do it again. Good job on 5 True and False, 404-726-0929. When we get back, let's talk some more Falcons. Josh Kendall of The Athletic stops by. What did he see at the scrimmage today? You got a Boots on the Ground report coming up next. Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. By all accounts, a successful first day of joint practices with the Titans, especially on offense. Drake London and the receivers were cooking. Bijan was doing his thing. And we'll see what happens tomorrow. To report on all of that and much more, make sure you check out his work at The Athletic. Our buddy Josh Kendall joining Chris Thomas tonight. Josh, appreciate the time as always. Let's start there. Sounded like from all accounts in your reporting that Michael Penix Jr. and Drake London were putting on a little bit of a show against those Titans secondary.
Yeah, they really looked good. That was one series where it kind of got away from everybody, it looked like. But other than that, I thought Michael Penix looked as good as he's looked all training camp. I have been a guy who is I'm not skeptical of Michael Penix at all, really. But I have pointed out that I believe that his accuracy and consistent accuracy needs to improve if this offense is going to be what Atlanta needs it to be. I saw that today. It wasn't perfect, but it was better. And you can see when it's cooking, when it's moving, you know, this team does have the potential to move the ball in chunks. So I think, you know, one day against the Titans, you know, no live tackling. You know, it was a good day.
Who, in your opinion, has stepped up the most in Darnell Mooney's absence?
It's Casey Washington right now. They gave Kadarrell Hodge the first shot at it, but it looks like that Casey Washington is the guy that if they had to roll out there against the Bucs tomorrow, it would be Casey going out there. He's looked good. He had a 52-yard touchdown today. He's explosive. He's strong. Not the biggest guy, but you know, very physical guy, and is proven, as people know from last year when he got a concussion, you know, he'll run into the wall for the ball. So strong hands, got a lot of experience last year with Michael Penix with the scout team before Penix took over the starting job. So I think that gives him some comfort level with Mike and Mike with him. So for right now, it looks like he's that guy.
Hopefully it doesn't really matter due to everyone on the starting unit staying healthy, but do you share in the growing concern, Josh, about the second offensive line unit?
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing the second offensive line, I think you're in trouble. I think, you know, we saw him sign Jake Hansen, a veteran center, Sunday. I think that was a the middle of the interior of that line is a worry for them. Kyle Hinton at right guard has been a consistent backup and a good quality backup for them. So I don't think that they're worried there. But Storm Norton, last year's swing tackle, has been out for more than a week now. They don't believe this is a long-term injury, but, you know, they put rookie Jack Nelson in there at right tackle a lot, and he struggled, like a lot of rookie right tackles, particularly seventh-round rookie right tackles, would be expected to do. So, yeah, if you get into the second, if you get in, you know, out of the top five of this offensive line, that's a real concern for Atlanta.
I know it's a lot of fodder. It's a lot of talk. It's a lot of speculation, Josh, but what have your eyes told you so far about the way Pitts has looked in camp?
You know, same as he's looked the last couple of years. You know, some flashes, but not enough consistency. He caught one ball from Penix today out of 17 pass attempts. I'm at wait and see. I mean, we have seen Pitts be a really effective pro. His rookie year, he's got 1,000 yards. second most many, you know, only one of only two tight ends in NFL history, right, to go over 1,000 yards his rookie season. So we've seen this guy be good. We haven't seen it since the injury, and we haven't seen it under this coaching staff and in this system. So, you know, we've got to see, and I'm not going to make any predictions or pronouncements about what we're going to see this year, Kyle Pitts.
When it comes to the kicking battle, I know Lenny Krieg went 1-for-2 in the opener, hit a boomer from 57 that could have been maybe 10 yards past that. But from all accounts, Josh, it really seems like Koo has returned back to form and has looked good so far.
Yeah, they both kicked 4 today. They were both 4-for-4. Koo's, you know, this is my expert kicking analysis. Koo's looked, you know, dead straight. You know, Krieg's all went through. Well, yeah, they were a little shaky. I mean, I think that this competition has been over for a week or so. They can keep Lenny Krieg around all year because he's IPP. He doesn't count against their roster count. There's no sense not just keeping him and seeing how the guy develops. But if you're Raheem Morris, based on what you've seen in training camp, but plus based on what you've seen the last 6 years from Younghoe Koo, you can't feel good in week one if you got a game-winning field goal. Who you want to send out there, Younghoe Koo or Lenny Krieg? He's never done it in a game. I don't think there's a kicking competition right now.
Talking all things Falcons with The Athletic's Josh Kendall right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Make sure you check out his work there for all the latest from Flowery Branch. How deep do you expect the interior defensive line rotation to be?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know that they can keep – you know, the numbers game, I don't know if they can keep more than 5 guys in there. Maybe, I guess if you're just talking interior guys, like you get away with 6, but however many they keep, they're going to play. You know, Nate Ollie, the new defensive line coach, has told them they'll only play, you know, unless they get into a tempo situation and they can't get them off the field, they'll only play 4 snaps at a time because he wants them to play as hard as they can those 4 snaps. So they're going to roll guys in. It will be one of the more interesting parts of the initial 53-man roster is how many guys they keep there, because that's going to take a lot of bodies to play that style.
Does James Pierce Jr. jump out at you in person the way that he's been described to us?
He did for the first 10 days or so. For the last week, I haven't seen it. Now, you know, I think that the Lions – paid him some attention because they, you know, had heard all the same things that we had, you know, they had heard all the things we'd all been saying. So I think that they chipped him. They gave him some extra attention. And I didn't watch, you know, I spent almost all of my time today at the joint practices watching Falcons offense against Titans defense because I wanted to see how Pennix looked. Tomorrow I'll pay more attention to Atlanta's defense and we'll see. But I think that one of the things for rookies is consistency and sustaining it. So I think James Pierce Jr. had a really hot start. Now let's see if he can keep it moving because he's just getting started on what's going to be the longest football season of his career.
How much pressure do you think there is on A.K. Arnold Ebukadi to get over that 6.5 sack threshold that he's kind of been stuck at the last couple of years?
Well, certainly. They bring in Leonard Floyd. They draft Jalen and James Pierce Jr. They are looking for more production there. I thought Arnold played really well Friday night. Again, this is preseason. I don't want to put too much into it. But he got around the corner a couple of times. When he got around the corner, the one time we saw, he went straight for the ball, you know, strip sack. You know, I think he is developing. I think he is better. I think he will be part of this rotation this season, especially early on this season. He's gotten a lot of first-team reps. Now they're rotating those guys. Do I expect him to start? You know, I don't know. I think probably if you made me pick right now who's walking out there snap one against the Bucks at edge, it would be Leonard Floyd and Arnold Ebukadi. Not 100%, but I do think Arnold will play, and I do think he's better. I don't know that he's a 12-sack guy. I don't think he is, but I think he's better.
Josh Woods, the linebacker, is a guy that's getting a lot of head turns at camp and in the preseason game as well. What do you make of the revamped linebacker room with him, Diablo, and Caden Ellis essentially leading the way right now?
Yeah, I think Josh Woods is a good player. I think he can absolutely help you. He's not a guy that you would want to roll out there and be a starter for you. But if you had to play Josh Woods for whatever reason, I think you'd be okay. I think the more interesting thing is that they are – putting D'Angelo Malone at inside linebacker a lot. Ronnie Harrison, the safety, quote unquote, that they just signed, is playing some inside linebacker a lot. I think that they have concerns about what, if anything, they're going to get a Troy Anderson this year. I think that there are some concerns. They have not said this, but I'm just reading their actions. I think there are some concerns about J.D. Bertrand, who missed four games of concussion last year, was out, you know, a couple days this year, although he came back now. I think that they're trying to make sure that they have answers, depth answers, at inside linebacker. They feel good about Ellis and Diablo. They feel really good about where they are with that front, with those front two.
I think the last two positions to talk about, cornerback and safety, is where the most, maybe not even concerned, but the most open-natured competition is in the defense right now. It looks like D. Alford is slightly ahead of Billy Bowman right now, and it looks like Xavier Watts is looking to make his case, but he's got Jordan Fuller and DeMarco Helms. How do you think those two rooms shake out?
I think that DeMarco Helms is probably their fourth safety, but an important guy in this rotation. I do think it's Watts and Fuller, and I think Watts is gaining ground on him. Alford slightly ahead of Bowman, but the secondary played well today. Chiga Kongwu, the Titans tight end, said really good things about the secondary after that practice.
So when it comes to the last couple of remaining roster spots, who are a couple of guys you're looking at over the course of the rest of the preseason to potentially make the roster? I'll throw out a couple of names. I've been hearing Lamar Jackson, maybe does Clark Phillips not make it this year? What type of role does a Zach Harrison have? Maybe a Kobe Bryant, Nash, the wide receiver, converted quarterback. Are those some of the guys you're looking at that could potentially make the roster?
I'm not expecting Nick Nash to make the roster. I do think Zach Harrison makes the roster. I think Clark Phillips has got some work to do, and he's out right now with an injury, so that doesn't help him. I forget who else you named. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant's on the fence. I think he's a practice squad guy.
And then Lamar
Jackson. Questions answered. Probably a practice squad guy. We'll see.
Yeah, but I think for the first time in a long time, the depth is there, Josh, in a way that it simply hasn't been in the last couple of years. And after the way that the secondary got exposed in a couple of games last year, Denver and Minnesota, I think, are the ones that are highlighted, to me at least. It feels like at least you're going to have a competent enough group, both at the front end and the back end, that some of those disaster games, I think, could be avoided in 2025.
They're going to have to be, yeah. And I agree with you.
All right, Josh, appreciate the time. As always, we'll check in soon. Enjoy the rest of camp tomorrow. Appreciate it.
404-7-
All right, thanks, Josh. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. That is Josh Kendall of The Athletic there checking in on all things Atlanta Falcons. When we get back, we'll talk some NFL with our buddy Greg Allman. There is a ton going on in the National Football League. Aaron Rodgers supposedly looks good in camp so far. Huh. What are some other things that we could be looking out for? Shedeur Sanders, still number four on the depth chart? Is he getting slided out there in Cleveland? And I'm keeping my eye on one of the two teams in New York. I'll tell you which one that is when we get back. Greg Allman joins me. Fox Sports national NFL writer, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and on the Odyssey app. We'll get a chance to chat with our buddy Greg Allman here at Fox Sports in just a second and break everything down. The Braves are playing a baseball game. They're up 1-0 on the Mets right now. And, listen, they won 4 out of 5 against the Marlins. They won in convincing fashion in most of those games. But at the end of the day, does it actually mean anything? My answer would be a resounding, How about no, Scotty? But it is nice to see, I guess at the end of the day, like, what are you looking for, right? Like, you're just looking for signs and symptoms of positivity and things that could be to come. And we'll see what winds up happening with the Braves and the end of the season if guys like Ozuna and Murph and what are those guys' futures here in Atlanta, right? And What are the futures of guys like Drake Baldwin? Is he going to be the superstar that we think he's going to be? Do we think that at the end of the day, Oren asked me in Five Braves True False, do we think that Austin Riley, Matt Olson, do those guys have bounce back seasons in 2026? I mean, your guess is as good as mine at this point. So at the end of the day, I'm just wondering, Oren, if I had to ask you right now, do you think that, let's say, if I position the question this way, do the overwhelming majority of Braves players, either due to injury or ineffectiveness, that struggled this year, bounce back next year? So like 70% of the guys.
A lot of the same. Most of this team, yes.
I think so as well. I think that would be the way that I'm leaning right now. I just think it's a situation where like guys like Chris Sale, injured, Spencer Strider, like those guys are too good, and too talented to be out for an extended period of time like that.
Would you say you are what you are, what the back of your baseball card says you are?
Right.
And the back of Spencer's card and the back of Chris Sale's card both say that these guys are all-stars. And Spencer was, what, second to third in Cy Young voting. Chris Sale won the Triple Crown last year and won the Cy Young. So there's a reason for that. Chris Sale's a 300-strikeout pitcher. So,
and he's also a guy that proved me wrong. I didn't think he was going to do what he did last year. I'm going to be completely honest. I thought he was going to come in here and be okay. I didn't think he was going to be awful, but I certainly thought his Cy Young days were behind him, right? I certainly thought his best pitcher in baseball days were behind him with the injuries and the ineffectiveness his last couple of years before he came to Atlanta. So maybe this is all just one big, as Oren used the correct word earlier in the show, outlier. It is all one big outlier. It is something that is not going to be systemic and not going to be a problem that impacts the Braves and this next generation of talent for years to come. Now, I do think they need a managerial change. I've waffled on this over the course of the year. I've put myself in knots trying to figure out how much, if at all, Brian Snicker is to blame. And ultimately, I don't care how much he is to blame because the season is what it is anyway, but he's got to go. He has to put himself in a position where he, if he wants to continue to be in the organization, will accept an advisory role, will accept a change of command, will accept not being the guy in the dugout anymore. And if he's not willing to do that, then there might need to be a mutual parting of the ways, for good or for bad. I think ultimately, though, it's going to be for good. I think this team needs a spark. I think this team needs a change. I think this team needs a new voice and a new direction. So Brian Snicker, to me, that's one piece of the puzzle that we've been trying to figure out for a long time, that I'm just not entirely sure there's any other answer at this point other than a new voice is needed. All right, now we'll talk some NFL on the WadeFord.com hotline with our buddy Greg Allman, covers the entire league for Fox Sports, and make sure you check out his writings and thoughts on the league there. Greg, let's start here. Some interesting news today. Jordan Love all of a sudden needs a procedure on his finger. Doesn't look like it's going to affect him long-term, but not what you want to hear out of Green Bay.
Yeah, it's one of those where, I mean, when they're confident he's back for the opener, you know, I mean, he missed time early last season. Not what you want to hear. But, yeah, definitely, you know, it sounds like a minor setback, but one that, you know, they have to be hopeful doesn't linger into the regular season. The start of their season, that division, every game's going to count and matter.
Yeah, and sticking in that division, obviously we saw what happened here in Atlanta preseason week one, Greg. Do you recall ever a time in your league covering it as extensively as you have where the players and coaches collectively got together in a preseason game or otherwise and said, all right, enough is enough?
I mean, the only thing that's even close to that is that is kind of the DeMar Hamlin type thing, where, again, it's just, I mean, both sides have to decide. You hate that it comes to this, but, you know, the league wants to try and keep it going. But I think if the coaches, to their credit, can get a read of the teams, and they don't want to play it. They don't want to think about going back on the field when, you know, they're worried about their teammate. I think they literally said, like, we'll play, but we're literally going to just keep taking knees until the game is over. So to their credit, they just suspend the game. It's preseason, you know, it's easy that way.
John Gruden got what was considered a victory in a Nevada court in terms of his attempt to get back into the league. Do you think he ever finds his way back to the NFL or even a high-ranking college job?
Yeah, I'll be intrigued to see. He was out here. He was actually at Bucks practice last week. Still lives here in Tampa, still calls Tampa home, so he's a little bit more prominent here. Yeah, it's interesting to see how it's going to shake out. I wondered if this was you worry that if this actually went to a trial, there would be a substantial amount of sensitive things that would be subject to discovery and subpoena, and probably not in the NFL's best interest to get to the public. So I wondered if this would be the tipping point to where now the league would look to settle in a way they hadn't up to this point. I'll be very surprised if this is something that actually goes to a jury trial, as would be the case now. It's definitely a better football sport when Gruden's coaching in it. You know, I think to see him, you know, I think it was fun when he was in the booth, obviously. It was fun when he came back. Now you see him doing these videos where he's just opening boxes from every single college in the country. It's one of those things where he's a colorful guy. I think most people have kind of put that in the past, if you will. I don't know if the league is completely as forgiving, but I don't think of him as being as radioactive or as toxic as he was when this all came out here in town. I mean, the Bucks took the measure of actually taking him out of their ring of honor, you know, and then they quietly decided to put him back in. So his name, you know, they have a game this weekend. It was the first game where his name was back up. So I think there's a little bit of a welcome back tour going where you're seeing him more. He's being accepted more. I think him being able to find a way to resolve this legal issue is probably the biggest hurdle to him getting back in everybody's good graces.
Speaking of toxic situations, what do you think the holdup is with James Cook in Buffalo? They need him, Greg.
Yeah, they're just not willing to pay him enough money. I mean, running back is a tough position. You know, Buffalo's gone out of their way. They've made major progress, and they're extending guys ahead of when they need to, trying to keep their core intact, and they just haven't necessarily made that a priority with Cook. So, to see that he's practicing his progress, I don't know that he's going to get the money he wants and the guaranteed money that he wants from Buffalo right now. So it's a little bit like what you have in Washington, where you have, you know, an absolute postseason contender that has a major piece that's creating drama right now. You know, I don't know if it's going to be something that resolves itself. Running backs are tricky because you saw a little bit with Saquon Barkley. We just saw Kyron Williams get a deal where they're starting to get paid a little bit better. And I'm sure James Cook sees that and wants to be a part of that. But for right now, for whatever reason, Buffalo is kind of holding back and waiting to see at a time when they're willing to give money to lots of other people on their team.
When it comes to sticking in that division, all reports out of Jets camp is that Justin Fields looks smooth. He looks good running the offense. Everything's honky-dory there with their new coach, albeit as intense as he's been with the media. Do you see the Jets as more than a 6 or 7 win team?
Well, I think they could be. I mean, I think I'm probably more excited about Aaron Glenn and that defense than I am about Justin Fields, but you know, that's a division that's really tough to see right now. You know, I think Miami, people are down on right now. Uncertainty there. I don't know how big of a step the Patriots will take forward in Mike Vrabel's first year. I think certainly expect more from Drake May in his second year. In Buffalo, I think, you know, Buffalo has had the reins of that division for so long. They could take a step back and still be easily the team to beat. So, yeah, New York's right in the middle of that, to see where things shake out. Obviously, you know, they've kind of moved on from the Aaron Rodgers era. They've got a 2-year window here where, you know, trying to make things work with Justin Fields. He'll have a good shake there, you know, probably a better chance than he had in Pittsburgh. But I don't know what to make of it. I think of them as better than 6 and 7 wins, but I don't know if they're necessarily a wild card yet right now either.
One more question on the AFC East. I'm fascinated by the Dolphins this season, Greg, because I think they have the potential to be one of the most potent offenses in the league, and they have a potential to crumble like a house of cards. Where do you see this thing shaking out, and what is a pivotal year for Mike McDaniel and co?
They have a lot. It seems like they have a lot of negative vibes to them right now. I mean, it's one of those where trying to get everything together, everybody's convinced Tyreek Hill's going to get traded at some point. This is probably a make-or-break year for Mike McDaniel. And this is one of those where if they're not keeping up with the Patriots, if they're not keeping up with the Jets, you know, this has been Buffalo's division, but they have to be able to chip into that and be a team that, you know, probably not only gets into the postseason, but makes some trouble in the playoffs. I don't know if that's going to happen. You'll see some people that are very low on them. That's a tough division to peg. When you think about trying to just pick the order 1-4 and not knowing, I think everybody starts with Buffalo. But the 2-3-4 is probably as unpredictable as just about any division right now.
Here in Atlanta, we joke around about the 9-5 connection with Drake London and Michael Penix Jr. They are looking spectacular in camp and looked so again today against the Titans in a joint practice. Do you think Drake London could cement himself as a top five receiver this year?
No, I think top five's tough. I mean, yeah, I guess that's within range for him. I mean, I think of him in that we just did top 10 receivers in the league. And, you know, I think you can make a case for London getting there. For him to get to top five, you're talking about now you're getting to 1,200 yards. You're getting to over 10 touchdowns. You know, I think he's definitely a wide receiver one, and I think he probably is still ascending. Maybe, you know, you think about their offense as a whole, you know, what he hasn't really had a prolific passer, if you will, in terms of having an entire season with somebody who's going to throw for 30 touchdowns. So he might be the beneficiary of you know, Michael Penix taking that next step. It's hard to imagine Penix having a whole lot of success without having Drake really involved, especially in the scoring part of it. So no, it's there for him. And I mean, obviously, you know, he's ready to get paid too. This is one of those where the longer they wait, if he has a breakout year, it can get really expensive at that position.
Yeah, the Falcons over the next couple of years are going to have to pay him, Bijan Robinson, figure out what they're doing with Kyle Pitts. They got a lot on their plate. Talking with Greg Allman, national Fox Sports writer, so make sure you check him out there. Wrapping up our conversation here, just a couple more. The Jerry Jones saga, every time we talk, Greg, it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. An article today headlines, how Jerry Jones' bungled contract negotiations cost the Cowboys $100 million in Parsons contract money. Do you foresee it being that bad when he eventually signs?
Well, I mean, there was a window where, I mean, if they had just extended him when they first could have, at the end of year three, I think top-of-the-line edge rushers are making $28, $30 million a year then. So, I mean, you can lock him up for 5 years at that. They didn't. They've waited. And now you see, you know, now it's a $40 million position. So you're talking about, you know, $12 million a year, more guarantees than ever before. So, I mean, again, I think this stuff is going to resolve itself kind of like Dak did, kind of like CD did, where there's all this acrimony, there's all this public back and forth. And then the end result is that they end up signing. It's just going to be a really expensive signing for them. You think about him wanting to reset the market. That's now, you're looking at like $42 million a year. So you're talking about $190 million for 4 years. Now I guess that's $170 million for 4 years, which is still crazy for a non-quarterback. But I think Micah Parsons has kind of set himself up where it's what you expect him to get. I don't know why Dallas has carried on as long as they have. There really isn't anything gained. Yeah, if you're one of those that believes that all attention and all publicity is good publicity, they've gotten that. I don't know that it's helped Jerry Jones in terms of his image around the league or making people forget how long it's been since they've been to a conference championship game.
Greg, save the best for last year. I'm sure you get asked this every single day, multiple times a day. What did you make of Shedeur Sanders' preseason debut and the fact that he's still QB4 on the depth chart?
Yeah, that QB4 thing, it doesn't make a whole lot of – I'm not worried about that. I mean, if you look at – I mean, I think Dylan Grabiel's hurt right now. I think he has every chance to step up and show something. You know, you just have to validate it. He's doing it in the first half of preseason games, so if he can get in there and do it again, all you can do is take advantage of what's in front of you, and I thought he did a really good job of that. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that had multiple touchdowns in the preseason and no picks. Got it done twice, you know, did exactly what he needed to do. If you're a fifth-round pick – and you're trying to make a case to be a starter, you have to outplay everybody in front of you. You have to show that you're worth getting past the experience of a Flacco, whatever. You know, I can't even think about the sunk cost in worrying about a third rounder versus a fifth rounder in terms of Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. I think the fans would certainly want to see Shedeur out there. I don't think there's a lot to be excited about with Cleveland right now. So if you can get people interested in your quarterback, The only way they're going to wade through the cap hell of that Deshaun Watson contract is if they can move forward with an inexpensive quarterback. They do not come more inexpensively than a fifth-round draft pick for the next 4 years. So that works out as an ideal scenario for them. It seems unlikely because the entire league passed on Shadur for four rounds and two full days of the draft. But he set himself up to make that at least a viable option if he can do the same thing in these next two preseason games.
Greg, appreciate the time as always. We'll be reading you at Fox Sports. We'll chat soon.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good one.
All right, that is Greg Allman of Fox Sports. When we get back, let's hear from one of the more interesting camp characters, Khalid Kareem, stopped by Andy and Randy today. You'll hear that conversation next. It is Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle, with you till 10 o'clock.